not just learning some Lanchim alone. So please fill out this registration, my own personal registration sheet, so I can keep track of who you are and which tests you've taken. And even if you registered in years past and you're trying to catch up on some missing bechina, so still please fill it out so I know exactly where you're holding.
To begin by sending a yashar koach to Rav Avi Dilitz, who is kind enough to join us, since this is supposed to be a year of halacha lemaaseh. It'd be nice if you knew what we're talking about. That helps sometimes. Rav Dilitz is a practicing moel, a beloved Talmud, practicing Moel, and prepared to answer whatever questions you have after he makes a presentation. But first, let's begin with the Gemara. The Gemara on Shabbos. Okay. It's relatively first page, or close to it. I'm just using an old copy, because I have some notes that I scribble along the side. It's a very good idea, these tapes. And Yitzhak Shem, next week I will send my tape to talk to your tapes. Gonna have to come. The Mishneh in Kuf Lamed Gimel. Osen kol tzorchei milim b'Shabbos. Molin u'porin. Umotitzin, that's wrong shot. Molin upolin, period. That's maisemila, or a semicolon, right? Umotitzin, benos no lea asplanis, that's post surgical. The common, whatever that's supposed to mean, maybe it's cumin, right? Im lo shochak be'erev Shabbos, then you prepare the day shinui. Lo eiz b'shinov v'nosin. Im lo toraf yayin v'shemen me'erev Shabbos, that's some kind of kabbalah that an emulsion of wine and oil is curative. Then you know since zeh ba'atzmo v'zeh ba'atzmo. That's so terrible if you put them on separately. V'nosin lo cholug l'chatchila. The cholok avi, I think, was most likely designed that the ora priya shouldn't slip, or ora, the ora shouldn't slip back over the corona. So they put on a little shirt, a little jacket to keep it on, like we do now with a regular bandage. Well, there, if you don't have it prepared for Shabbos, you know it's essential for the meal, it's not doche Shabbos, korech ole smartu, put a plain bandage on it. Im lo hiske me'er Shabbos, and carried korech al azbo meviu afila michotzer acheres. That's not kederech hotzo also al deishinui. Okay, we won't devote much time to that. But if you turn the page, on the other page you have a. Motzitzin, Amar Rapope, Midiko Mechal Leola Shabbata, Mitzitza, whether Bepeh or Bekli, is a Iso Doraisa on Shabbos, Sakonahu, and maybe a Doraisa, even if you hold. Melocha Shein Tzicha L'Gufo is potu. Don't hold like the Rambam. This may very well be called Melocha Shein Tzicha L'Gufo, because you need the blood to come out, and you need to see how much blood comes out. So it may be similar to what Tosha says in Dav Hei in Ksubis, that a damsulim, taking out damsulim to be Rishona B'Shabbos, is called a melocha shetzricha l'gufo. That's a big question, but the Raisa is badai. You have potter, certain potter, right? For Malkus, certainly you're doing a melocha d'Raisa there, and then according to the Rambam, and let me make a statement, it should sound dramatic, but it's not, it's simple pshat. According to Rambam, today, if a moel makes mitzitza on Shabbos, he's chayev or kom chatos, and he better keep track of how many mitzitza b'Shabbos he did, because me'er yibona beis hamikdash, and he'll have to bring a chatos shmeino for each and every one of them. Because the only heter for doing it on Shabbos says, because why? Midiko mechal Shabbato. You're not machal Shabbos when you do meal on Shabbos. No chil Shabbos. Meal is docher Shabbos. Because you machal Shabbos. The only heter you have is sakonahu. So if you believed today, as I don't think any rational individual would question, that the mitzitza has no aspect of sakona, that it's analogous to what we'll see soon to Rechitza b'yom shlishi, where the Ragmora said it's a chiv because of sakona, you can wash the baby, boil water on the third day. If you do the mila on Thursday, and Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, on the third day, the baby must be washed. And if nishpach, if the hot water was spilled out or was the fire went out, you're allowed to boil water on Shabbos for the third day because that's a kabbalah. That the third day is the difficult day, like Rashi says in Vayera, Pasha Vayera, that Kodesh Baruch Hu appeared to Abraham B'yom Shlishi L'Miloso, seems to be some kind of critical day. Right? But we know today that is absolutely not true. So you have also, the Rambam quotes it, L'Haloche, the Mechaber already, as we'll see, says, no, we don't know it anymore that way, it's no longer Sakone. So we don't do it. So Nishtane Yediyas HaTeva is a fact in Haloche. And certainly this idea that Mitzitza is necessary in order to cure to heal the wound, right, has no rational explanation today. Even though, if you'll see in the Achoinim, everyone tries to figure out, actually in Shoinim also, maybe a Rishon even that mentions it, that it's so low that the Eidah shouldn't swell. But we know that's not a factor now, because the swelling of the Eidah later on was due to infection, not to the blood that accumulated in it. So now the same Edam Mifka pocket. What does it mean? Kamash Palon, that what? That's Chaburi Mechmo. Right? Kamash Palon Chaburi Mechmo. Right? But Bidumia is no different than the bandage after the meal, kilovit sakonahu. Afachanami kilovit sakonahu. So how it developed that some people are trying to ram a notion into the halacha that mitzitza is the third component of mila. Mila, priya, and mitzitza. It's plain. One is amaratus, and if they're doing it because they have an agenda, right, then there's a chiyuv miso for it. Right? As the famous marshal in Bava Kamma, where you remember two officers of the king sat in Besmerdish to hear what anti-Christian or anti-pagan teachings are going on in the Besmerdish, right? And they taught the halacha that Shor is Shol Shenogach L'Shor Akum is Potter, Shol Shenogach Yisrael Nogach L'Shor is Chayev. And after that they came over to them and said, because we heard so many other nice things from you, we won't report this. So the Mashal asked, what kind of idiots, why did they teach that halacha when the people were there, when they had officers of the king, you could have skipped, not teach that halacha. Because if you do that, you're not prepared to teach the halacha as it is, then you kofel b'toras Moshe. and therefore they had no choice. They had to do it, even though there was pekuach nefesh involved. From here you hold that in order to pervert the teachings of the Torah, it's analogous to be kofer by Hashem, for which there's a chiyuv of kiddush Hashem. There's a chiyuv. Even the consequences are unacceptable to you, you have to suffer them.
Rebbe? Rebbe Tendler?
Yeah.
How's Rebbe learning the Havamin of the Gemara? That
Mifkat Pokit.
Not the fact that Ma'u Detema, that it's Mifkat Pokit, and there's no Isser of Shabbos.
Right.
So why are you doing it?
Which one? You might think, no. So therefore, if that pocket, and there is no Isur, there is Isur of Shabbos. If you don't do it, you don't do it.
But what would be the reason that they're doing it? Also,
he wants to be Mavir the Moel. The conclusion is that the Moel loses his job
because
he didn't do it.
Because so Sakon,
because Sakon,
not because of Sakana. So yeah? What was that Havamina?
That it wasn't Sakon.
And why they do it?
I'm sorry.
What would be the purpose of doing it if not for Sakana?
Yes, no. No, not everything that you do in medicine,
so
you don't
flaw,
do with Sakana. It's good practice, but not
Sakana.
I need Sakana. I need Sakana, not Sakana, Saver. Even Sakana Saver wouldn't be a heter. Right? Mm. The concept of Dam Mifka Pokin, when we any time explaining it, it occurs in Ksubis. The concept of Mifka Pokin means no one had an idea that a baby has a little pocket, a little capsule of blood that Kodesh Baruch Hu put in, and then you're not taking dam shebeivorim, not taking the dam that belongs to the circulatory system, but it's dam mifkat pocket, preserved there. They had no such concept. Dam mifkat pocket concept is, it couldn't be part of the intended circulatory system, because Kodesh Baruch Hu gave a mitzvah with chiyuv kores to get rid of that blood. So it was destined from the very beginning to be blood that spilled. Memele can't be considered to be dam that is part of the general dam, what the Bali Tosis call in the Isur Shechita. It's a dam of Netilas Neshama. So you can't call this dam as dam Neshama. That's the same svara for dam Sulim. Dam Sulim is Mifkat Pokit, because since Kodesh Baruch Hu intended for every woman to lose this amount of blood, then it can't be considered to be dam neshama, right? As the Bali Tosis lumped together Shechita and Chabur, etc., into one general category of Netilas Neshama. Okay. With that little introduction, I'll turn over to Rav Avi to tell you what we're talking about. Remember, the Gemara has a shaila. Havamina, where do we make mila from? Maybe from the finger, maybe from the nose, right? So you have to see where you make mila from. In this nispach, in this addendum, I gave you the first page, which Avi insisted that I prepared with a blank cover page, so it's not to have some accusations going around about what I'm teaching this place. So if you start off, just explain the anatomy and tell them what you do to modify the anatomy.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kevin. I'm assuming we're all relatively familiar with the anatomy, so we're not going to go into too much graphic detail. And in a few minutes, I'm going to give a visual demonstration, but not on the real thing. We'll use a.
But he accepts volunteers.
It's not a joke. Actually, when I was learning Mila in Yerushalayim, so I learned with a Sephardi Moel, and every time he finished the bris. So in the culture, everybody always stands around at the bris, and they all know him, because either he or his father mauled all these guys. So he's holding up the baby, and he says, okay, mazal tov, mazal tov, achshav tikunim. And then all these guys are like, oh, tikunim. That's their... Okay, anyway, so over here, this is an x-ray vision of the shaft of the, should we use Lashon Nekiyah? Okay. Of the penis, thank you. And this area, which you see, which is labeled as the coronal sulcus, that black area, that's a membrane which covers the glands. The glands is the atara. That's what we're ultimately looking to reveal. So in other words, if you imagine that whole black line all the way around, that whole coronal sulcus is the skin above that is malleable. We pull it in front of the glands, and then it's excised at that point in front of the glands. I'll show you soon how that's done. And then the skin, where right above the frenulum over here, and at the edge of the coronal sulcus over here, the skin retracts over there, revealing the glands, and that's essentially what Mila is. Okay. Now if I can give you the classic way in which we describe it in Moel terms is the old sleeve trick. Okay, the hand looks, if you have a nice imagination, like a shaft and a glands. Okay, so now if I use my sleeve, now what I have here is an orla covering my fist. Okay, now if I pull, this skin is malleable. It stretches. If I pull hard enough, my fist, which is representing the glands, is over here, and my sleeve, representing the orla, is in front of the fist. Now I'm not asking anybody to cut my sleeve because that would be bad. But let's say now I excise the skin which is in front over here. What ends up happening is naturally it retracts, and then the glands is revealed. That's what essentially Mila is. I'll give a demonstration in a second with the instruments, but I want to talk for a few minutes about what it is. One second, what it is that you should be aware of, that what you should be looking for. Certainly, if you're going to be a rabbi of somebody who's going to be having a bris, or in any way advising on that. Yes.
Where were these pages taken from?
Rev. Tendler supplied.
Where were they taken from?
Yeah.
From a medical text. You see, surgical text entitled "On Top Circumcision" to tell how you make a circumcision. How you make a circumcision? It's an instruction manual for a surgeon. If the moil comes with the manual and he's looking at it while doing the meal, I suggest you get another moil.
Okay. All right, so before we actually do talk about the Mila per se, take a look at the next page, and Tendler will probably talk a little bit more about this, but just so that you could see, and there are different situations.
Here's a reason why we delay the Mila. Sometimes in the development, there's a failure, so that when the development should have continued, instead the development ended. In the shaft, in the penis, there is a tube called the urethra, to which the urine comes out, and to which shifazela comes out. That urethra is supposed to go to the end of the penis. And sometimes it ends too short. That's why I put the arrow, I added that arrow, right? In the Achonim, they refer to it nolad mol b'miksas, because often with it, the ola doesn't cover the complete glands. Now, this poor fellow, if you visualize it, will have to urinate like a woman, have to sit down to urinate. Now, if it's that bad, you have to do something about it. Then they need to extend the tube inside. To extend the tube inside, I need tissue that's compatible from the osoish, from the baby. The problem is that almost all skin that you would take from any part of a male body will grow here. The only skin that doesn't grow here, vada, is the ola. So you need the ola to extend the tube inside. So therefore you have to wait sometimes as much as 2 to 4 years until the ola is big enough so that it can be now used. What they do basically is they cut open the penis, they fold the Orla down, complete the tube, and leave it partly attached so that the blood supply is maintained, a flap technique. When it's fully healed, they clip it off, and the baby is perfectly fine, perfectly normal. Often, that's a job that a Rav has to know. I mean, in fact, a Rav has to know. Often, the opening is not here, but the opening is over here. Marash. The surgeons, the urologists push for, we got to make him normal. There's no head to subject the baby to surgery for that. It doesn't interfere with his lifestyle. He'll be able to inseminate his wife. This man, this one here, when he's a man, can't inseminate his wife. The shechuzer will come out from the bottom. But if there is no functional problem, they give it a number. Hypospadia 1, 2, 3. Hypospadia 1 and 2 should not be corrected. You have to advise the parents, no need to do so. If it's hypospadia, we'll say that's the test. When it's so bad that you'll not be able to urinate outward here, but urinate down, right? Then it must be corrected.
How common is this?
Common.
It's becoming more and more common, believe it or not. I mean, not as bad as this.
Do you have
but
more,
no, it's common.
But the hypospadia is... At Mount Sinai, when I was there recently, I asked that, I think it's something like 1 in 300.
Right. I mean, the hypospadia is, you know, the mild cases are it's a little off-center, but there are cases, here is it's at the bottom of the glands, but it could be as low down as anywhere on the shaft or even on the scrotum. And obviously those types of things any male who touches that should also not, should really quit his day job. I mean, should find a different day job. Yeah.
So what do you do for Mila? Yeah, that would be surgery.
Right, so if the male is trained in doing that, then, and he's been in the operating room and he's participated in a very strong way, then he'll go into an operating room and do it. This is the type of thing which you're doing under general anesthesia.
Okay, here's where Baruch Hashem, our chevra come in. Thank God we have Fum, urologists, from pediatric urologists who do this work routinely. The family has to be advised to take a home urologist who makes a Maisa Mila in the operating room. You'll have to leave out the tuna fish and the tuna fish salad, but they can make the simcha a little bit later.
That, I mean, that's something which the truth is that doctors don't necessarily look for, unless it's blatantly obvious, but there have been cases where I've come to visit parents, open up the baby's diaper, and you see that it doesn't look normal, and that in some way, if this is the shaft, so the glands is either bent down to the point that almost the tip of the glands is attached to the scrotum, and it happens. That's the way sometimes the child develops, and that's something which you need to be aware of. And then the parents need to understand that their baby's fine and it's going to be corrected. And the rabbi needs to be sensitive enough to say, we're not going to have a bris in the shul on day 8 and it's going to take place later. Yeah.
Right. So when that, like, tell me something, hypospadia is 1 or 2, A or B, whatever. The baby doesn't need to have the surgery. If the parents want the baby to have the surgery, so then, like, do you tell them to wait or, like, you kind of let the parents make the decision? Because I imagine once you do the bris mila, then you can't use
this. Okay, this for sure, which I've seen it happen routinely. I'm also a practicing rabbi. Yeah. They don't want to name the baby till the bris. So they have a he in the crib because you name the baby at the bris. No, there's no such halach. You name the baby, entitled to a name, and the kriya shem at the bris, it's not a halacha like hegdish. That the Kriya Shem is a Maisa Hegdish, a Maisa Neder, Erchen. Then it's a place you call it Shmo B'Yisroel, which is the name he's given. The delay is strictly medical. You're totally at the mercy of the doctors.
So if the parents want to delay to correct the problem, even if it's not so bad to them.
If they want to delay when it's not necessary,
right?
You tell them they're over on a Iso Sheyesh Bokoris every day. Not nice.
They shouldn't do the surgery. You have saying that if it's not necessary, they have no head to do the surgery.
Right. It's not necessary. The fact that they want to do it for, quote, cosmetic purposes, you tell them, and if you find that they don't listen, it's a good initiation to the rabbonos.
Okay. All right. So what I'm going to do now is just go into the two more things which I want to show you. And then, I'll leave open for discussion the topic which I'm sure of Thomas is going to speak most about. Turn to page 3 for a second. Okay, page 3. This is my contribution to your booklet, and that's and I'm sorry about the poor quality of the photocopy. But when you try photocopying these things, they get raised off of the machine. So next time I'll have a digital photograph and we'll put it in. But in any case, this is what it is. So. I'm not going to read this for you because I know you can all read, but what I am going to show you is something which is not here, and that is the old school traditional moel knife, which if any moel has any common decency, unless he's really good at something, he won't use it. This is the old school Mila knife, which is traditionally a two-bladed piece of steel. Based on the a drash off of the pasuk v'cher ppios biyadam. Ppios means right, shtepios, two-sided. So when I was first learning, the guy who taught me said you have to buy it. So I bought it. But since then, I've never used it. Thank God for the sake of the children. Because basically, if you're going to use this item, after you use it, you have to sterilize it. Every time you sterilize it, it loses its sharpness. And then you have to sharpen it. But of course, once you've sharpened it, you have to sterilize it. So it's a catch-22. Now, there are people who...
That's why the Moalim, most Chassidish Moalim, never sterilize their instruments. They dip it in alcohol. And the taina is, I can't sterilize the instrument. They would want to. But it gets dull, and then it's harder. Doesn't do a clean cut. The idea of using, however... you have the double-edged one?
No, not yet. Huh? I'm not that fancy yet.
There's a company came out last year making a razor blade disposable. In a holder, disposable. They sell it sterile with a double-edged, a double-sided blade.
Right.
So it's to fulfill the minig of therapy to use biyodo.
Another reason for the minig was because they thought that the moel might be blind. And so he'll pick up the knife and he's not going to check which side is sharp. So this way, he'll make sure to get it sharp. I read that somewhere.
What's the
Zohar,
right?
What are
they
doing then?
It's a
pasuk,
but it's a
Joshua.
But it's based on the Zohar,
so
it was basically accepted until recently?
It doesn't cost any money except the Zohar too.
So the best thing to use is a scalpel, because a scalpel is the sharpest thing that you'll find, and it costs nothing, a couple of pennies, and it's definitely worth it. Mila, as it is, should be an incision, and literally like cutting butter. And if you ever see a moil,
tell me about this one too.
Oh, it's just
to say it didn't cost any money. The Boronics, people from the Boronic Kehila, put together. They want to open it. Everything that you see here, in plastic and disposable. Yeah, but it costs $25, so it never made it in the market. A very nice thing. Yeah, it comes sterile. Use it once. So everything you see in the table, is there in plastic. That's disposable. It never made it in the market because of the $25.
Right.
Didn't sell. They call it britachon.
Of course, that's not a guarantee that your baby's safe. The guy using it has to be good. Okay. So anyway, now if you ever see a moel who uses a scalpel or anything and starts going like this, and I've seen it, it's the most frightening thing. As he's doing the mila, that gets into that. First of all, is tremendously painful to the baby, and also gets into the whole discussion of what tzitzin. Shema'akin and Tzitzin She'enin Ma'akin are, which I'll leave to Rav Tenlin to discuss. Okay? My personal opinion is that when it comes to a moel coming in to do a bris, everything should be sterilized. We do bris milah not because it's a circumcision, not because of any medical benefits, but because it's a mitzvah in the Torah. And but at the same time, let's be realistic, it's the baby is going to have a wound, there's going to be bleeding, so everything really should be sterile. This is a surgical procedure.
This is one of the disposable ones that I happen to have.
Okay.
What
I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask Dr. Wilbur over here to offer his hand. I'm not going to hurt you, I promise. Okay? To give our visual demonstration.
He said that last year also.
the guy never forgave him. Okay. All right, so if you could close your fist, I'd appreciate it. We'll see if you can get this on. I'm not going to do it for you. Thanks. Okay? And I'll show you how this is done. Now, I had a bris this morning, so I brought the Arla, if anybody really wants to see it. Most of you have probably never seen an Arla before.
Can you turn around and face the class?
Can I? Oh, yeah, sure. I'll ask you to stand up. Okay?
Should
you
be
just
stand
up? No, it's fine. This is fine. Okay. Actually, you know what? Yeah, put it on your hand. I'll use your finger better. That'll be safer. Okay. I thought I had brought more liquids. No, that's fine. I'll give you some alcohol so you can wash yourself. Okay. So essentially, give me one finger. Good. So if his finger over here is the penis. So what we have is the tip of the urethra right at the end over here, which is the tip of the orla. Now the orla contains underneath it, directly parallel to the orla, is the ora pria, a membrane, a mucous membrane, which also needs to be removed from on top of the glands during mila. There are two ways in which a person can go about doing that. One is the more traditional way of taking off the orla and then grabbing the ora pria with one's usually fingernails and then tearing it and then folding it back onto the shaft. That's one way. Another way is what's called the Bevas Achas method, which depending on how good the moil is, either grabbing the Orla and Priya and squeezing hard enough to grab them both at the same time, or using an instrument, which I'll show you in a second, called a hemostat.
At which thing on here is the Orha Priya? What's it called?
Let me see. What they call the coronal sulcus. You can't see it as a membrane. You can't see it really because that's not the way the image that they have here goes. But where that black thing is, that's where the membrane is. Okay, that line all the way around. It's directly parallel. It's a membrane. It's tissue.
Thin skin.
Okay, it's a very thin skin. But if it's not removed, the orla can grow back, and the baby will definitely look like he's not circumcised. Okay, now. So what's important to also realize is that when take a look at this glove, okay? Imagine this is an orla for a second, and it's malleable.
I have trouble focusing. You know what a hard-boiled egg looks like?
Oh, okay. Right.
Under the shell, there's often a thin skin. That's the priya.
Right. Okay.
The shell being the orla and the skin.
Now, you can imagine that if a person does mila and is not careful about what they cut off, okay, imagine I'm pulling this glove, okay, any point on this glove, you have no idea anymore because it all looks the same, how much I'm going to be cutting off. The only part which needs to be cut off is the skin directly covering the glands. For a mila to not be kosher, there has to be skin which still climbs up on the glands. Otherwise, during an erection. But otherwise it's kosher. But now in terms of the baby, you could talk about aesthetics, but you could also talk about health-wise, in terms of his ability to attain an erection, when it's time for him to become a father. The amount of skin which is removed is something which needs to be taken into consideration. Once a person grabs it, unless they're really, really good, and they know exactly, and they follow what they're supposed to be doing, it's hard to know whether you're grabbing the right amount. So as such, before the circumcision is done, it's a good idea for the moil.
Too much or too little?
Both. You want to get the right amount.
If you take off too little, then you still take off too much, that causes health problems?
I'm not saying causes health problems, but certainly when the child has relations with his wife and possibly achieves an erection once he's an adult, it could be painful, and it's not necessary.
They cut up the skin. Scar tissue will form.
Okay, so it's a good idea is if you know what you're looking for, right underneath where the glands is, where the skin is, it's a good idea to make a circle. Now, some oils do this, some oils don't.
Yeah, but excuse me, by the way, you people have attended prisons. Some of you have been up close.
Yeah.
Did you ever see a moil do that?
No. Okay.
I only two moils do it, catecholamine and billet.
Okay.
And not to do it is really a pshia. No excuse whatsoever. Every surgeon has a marking pen, and he's been done a appendectomy 100 times. He still marks the area that he wants to cut.
So then, now, there's usually, typically we're going to be taking off more off the top. Just take a look at your picture, you'll see that the amount of skin on the surrounding the glands on the top is significantly more than on the bottom. Okay, we don't want to if possible we try not to hit the frenulum. Frenulum is the mark right beneath the glands, which has a propensity to bleed a lot more.
It's a bigger blood vessel runs along there.
So you want to try to avoid that, but certainly to also get all the skin which is beyond the glands. So now at this point the Or HaPriya, which is underneath the Orla, is very often attached to the glands through skin adhesions which need to be broken. Okay, so what we do is we take the probe, which is also called a mafrid in Hebrew, and place it inside the into the urethral opening, but not inside the glands. Okay, in other words, if I'll show you on the image here, we're not going in down this tube. That would be very bad. Okay, that's the type of thing. That's when you put a catheter. The catheter goes in there, but this is not a catheter. And if anybody thinks it's a catheter, also go into a different line of work. Okay? You put this right above the glands in here, and then separate the Or HaPriya from the glands in that area. We go around.
If you attend a bris by most Chassidish Shemolim, they do not do that. Why? Because they have a minig, which is evil. They do that probing in the room with the mother before they come out to the shul. My shvirz atzal held that there was an isu of chovil b'chaveiro. It's not machmas mila. It causes two times pain to the baby. But the advantage is that the mila goes faster. Molim like to boast how fast they do the mila. They don't have to do the probing, which takes 5 seconds or 10 seconds, but they do the probing previously. And very often, if there's a delay in the mila, they have trouble pulling the orla down because the gid swelled due to the injury before.
Then, if you're going to do it b'vas achas, this is what helps you grab it. Now, even doing it b'vas achas, this doesn't necessarily get all of the Or HaPriya. It still needs to be pressed, but following your line. This is not the way we do it I never do it from this angle. This is for demonstration purposes. Okay? Then put on this is a magain, the shield, as opposed to the magain clamp, which Rokotem is going to talk about. Follow the line. Okay? This is not the right angle, but follow the line. Okay? And then using the knife, but the knife's not going to work
here.
The shield is to protect the glands. So now because we don't want to touch the glands. The Bronstein clamp, which Rav Tendler will talk about, and I think on page 13?
Yeah.
Whatever. There is danger associated with it in which it could possibly grab the tip of the glands and I'll leave the rest to your imagination when the bris takes place. Now a knife would normally go across here, but of course it's not going to cut the glove. Now you may laugh when I do this. Well, that also doesn't happen in the bris. Okay? But you see, it came back, and now there's the circumcised finger. Okay, that's what happened. Okay, at that point in time, typically, so here's the, you know, here's the orla, and then we'll put doing the tzitzit with the glass tube, which I always put gauze inside, so nothing gets between me and the baby in either direction. It fits on well, not fits on pretty well, and a vacuum is easily created. Okay, thank you so much.
Can you give me you have a hemostat here?
You cut with this?
Yeah.
No, I cut with a knife.
Oh,
but,
you just did it for...
I did it, yeah. Cutting this with the knife is not really going to happen. So...
If you can please turn to page 5. I'm sorry that I couldn't get the one Moyle Munsey who admits that he has a Bronstein clamp the way in Eretz Yisrael. So I couldn't get the Bronstein clamp to show you. But the Bronstein clamp is nothing more than this. Only you see it over here. It's made so that here you see this holds now. That lever compresses the two teeth of the Bronstein clamp.
The Bronstein clamp was designed
just like that,
like this.
But has a lever to bring those two together.
So that instead of the hole being
now,
here...
The advantage of the Bronstein clamp is it crushes all the blood vessels, and when you cut, there's no bleeding. The molim have to worry, a kosher moel has to worry, you need a toughest dambris. And you get a bloodless... That's desirable in the secular world. It's a non-kosher mila. It's a mila, most likely not kosher midoraisa. Without a toughest dambris, there's no mila. So the reason, when you read this to yourself, Modor Rabba Loraisa, all the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbonim, Grebis, came out with an attack on the Bronstein clamp because it could be done bloodless. It can be done not bloodless too. How? The model that I'm referring to feels he has to use the Bronstein clamp. That's how he learned. If you go ahead and file a little gash in one of the teeth, then when it closes at one point, it won't close. At that point, it'll bleed.
Right. Maybe just to clarify that the concept of Hatovas Dambris, so Rebbe is assuming that Hatovas Dambris,
yes,
which is a discussion, but Rebbe Moshe held that that's necessary for every Mila, and not just...
No, the reason,
Mila,
I'll give the reason. The reason why they asked him, why my Shreya joined the Isu, is for other reasons. I think much of it had to do with the livelihood of the molar. This is like a pencil sharpener. Any shlomazel can use it. It's a molar, you have to know something. Now, that's not how mila is done in the secular world. But the doctor's mila is done this way. This is the Gamko clamp. Okay, that's the picture you have there, the middle picture. Yeah. Okay, the Gamko clamp was invented during the Inquisition in Spain. There's no other explanation for it. Okay? You saw how mila is done our way. The way mila is done their way, they take the ora orlo with the scissors and split it. They then take this bell, they come in different sizes, and slip it over the gid. Slip it over the gid. Now, it takes a bit of manipulation to do it. They then put this back together and put it back together and compress it. Screw it down. Now visualize what's happening. The ora orla is here with the ora priya together. They slip it under the ora orla and the ora priya. This is then compressed and allowed to be there for 20 minutes. At which time, two things happen. All the blood vessels are crushed. This is a powerful... There's no room here. Second, the ora orla and ora priya are fused by the pressure. When you take it off, you have a completely, quote, healed wound. There's no bleeding. The two, they don't need any bandaging. It's all finished. It's done without anesthesia. Today, because of a ruling of the New York City Health Department, they have to use some kind of anesthesia. But they were doing it all these years without any anesthesia. The baby screams. Who does it? Usually the obstetrician. The obstetrician are usually the ball in the Goyish world. This Gamko clamp is where most, quote, Bali Tshuva, unfortunately, they had to go through that process. If Mila was done before the family became Bali Tshuva, they had this done. Cosmetically, it does a beautiful job because, as Avi explained to you, when you pull forward, the skin is flexible, the top pulls a little bit more, where the forceps hold it, the other one pulls a little bit less, so you don't have a perfectly circumference on the gi. This doesn't. Cosmetically very nice, etc., etc. Api halocha has a real big shaila whether this is a kosher vila. Shaila is whether the initial slit that's made with the scissors, whether that is considered to be part of the mila, then it will be mila with hatofas dam. But it, as I believe, this is only hachana lemila. It has nothing to do with the mila. It's only a means of slipping an instrument on. And therefore, it shouldn't be considered part of the mila, then the mila is totally bloodless. There's no bandaging, there's no need for bandaging, there's no bloodaging. That poses the shaila that someone is had such a mila, Baal Tshuva, born from a Jewish mother, whether he should have a tofas dam bris or not.
Two more things.
Yeah, want to say something else?
Two more things. Okay, so on page 8, I have a from the national news brief of the New York Times, talks about, in the smaller package. So if you look at the second to last paragraph, it talks about injuries which came from a number of reports from the use of these two clamps, the Bronstein clamp and the Mugging and the Gamko. So you can read it for yourself. 4 cases, the tip of the penis was amputated, which required surgical repair or reconstruction. That's not the type of thing you want to be dealing with in any capacity. And just with this kind of shield, which is used by pretty much by frumoles, but frumoles sometimes have a tendency to use the Bronstein when they're not being scrutinized. So this it's impossible for this to grab the glands in any way. So with this, the glands will always be completely safe. With the Bronstein, it can possibly grab it and catch it in its jaws when it crushes. Okay, the last thing which I wanted to show you is just one thing which, I mean, you could take it how you will. On page 13, I was learning these halakhos last year, which is not really often learned, and I thought that this had would add something to the Mitzitza controversy. Not to share somebody's drink. Now I know that people who usually follow this one are accused of being germies, which is a really horrible, horrible thing to do. But if you look at the parts which are underlined in the Mishnah Berurah, he says, okay, now just as a minor example, I heard a story on the radio a couple of days ago about these three kids on a hockey team in high school who got meningitis, and they claimed it was because they shared a water bottle. Now if that's what happens from saliva, imagine putting saliva on an open wound, which I'm sure Tana is going to talk about a lot more.
No, actually, I gave you all you need to read about it, make some reference to it.
Okay. And the last...
But anyway, what you heard from the Moalim, that saliva is the best antiseptic, is not Makubal in the medical profession.
Okay. And my last thing is I have an Orla, if anybody wants to see it, I'm not going to hold it up now, but I'll show it to you afterwards. What?
Show up on pizza, get some idea of how much is cut off.
Okay. All right, just to get an idea.
The meaning is to bury it.
Right, and I will. There are a lot of dirty jokes about what they do with Orlas. The best one I've heard actually from Rav Tendler, that they send it to the...
Ireland.
To the Ireland, and they bring us back cops. So, all right, whatever. Or to the IRS, and they send back. just think about any synonym for the area where we do circumcision, then you'll get it. Okay. This is not a worm.
That's the whole thing.
Okay. This is it.
Varies in size, individual, but minor differences.
This is an orla. The tip of the what was it initially covering the glands, the tip is over here, and if anybody wants, I'll show it to you afterwards. And the incision, like I showed you, is on an angle, because there's a lot more on top than on the bottom. Having put it in alcohol, you're not going to see my mark, but there was a marker on here before. And in the inside, if I could show you, if you were to examine it, this is the Or HaPriya, or much of it, directly underneath the glands, and that's basically it. I'm not going to dissect it. Yeah.
Show us that.
What? Yeah, sure. Bill.
Can you explain what you do with the Or HaPriya? Can you pull it up and fold it back on the field?
Yeah. The
How
Or
does it stay?
What? How does it stay? Yeah. So when the Or HaPriya is cut and then folded back, then it's basically bent. It becomes, let's say, a fleshy area. In other words, it was first here, and now it's here. Okay. When the bandage is put on top of that, because the area where the incision was is now underneath the glands. The glands is not bleeding. The incision is right beneath the glands. So the area where the Or HaPriya is now folded, a bandage is put on top of it, and it eventually...
Ola, the halacha is, halacha Moshe B'Sinai, Ola has to be taken off. Hasarasa Ola. Priya doesn't have to be taken off. Priya has to be, because Megale has to Megale. So if I just push it back, it's also good. The minig, you can push it back. The minig among... The old Moalim was to, the most widespread meaning, was to then rip the Or HaPriya with your fingernails. And many of the old Moalim, Ad Hayom, who trained that way, have one fingernail which is angled, make it like a spade, so that they can get in to the Or HaPriya and rip it up. There's a whole big tumult now with the fundamentalist Taliban approach that Judaism is taking today. There's a big campaign to not to allow Avi to function as a mohel, because he removes the Or HaPriya at the same time that he removes the Or HaOlam.
Even worse, I use gloves.
And they are that. And they came in quoting from a Zohar that you do a mitzvah with tziporin. What's the mitzvah you do with tziporin? Every part of the body you does a mitzvah. The tziporin does the mitzvah of priya. If you look in the Rav Yankov Emden Siddur, in Hilchas Mila, he has a beautiful line. Hane bavloi mumchenheim, shemolin uporin bevasachas. He lauded the bavloim that they learned how to make milu priya bevasachas. What did they do? Instead of pulling off the ola and then making priya, they stuck their fingernail, or maybe they used a forceps like this, but most likely they stuck the fingernail under the Or HaPriya and pulled it both together. You put on the shield, then you decapitate, you amputate both the ola. That is far kinder to the child. The ripping of the Or HaPriya is full of nerve cells. That Or HaPriya is very painful to the child. Yeah. And none of the Gedolim that I know, I remember speaking to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal. They had nothing more than the quote from the Rabbi Yankov Emden that it's a mile, and since it's less pain for the child, it should be done that way. Lately, there's been a tremendous campaign, and I showed Avi in my office. I didn't give it to you from a sefer Milo Kilchosa, right? That if you don't make Priya b'tziporin on Shabbos, then you chayev chores for chidl Shabbos. How that developed, I don't know. Some kind of you skipped over something to figure it out, that if you don't make priya b'siporim, but you do it b'basachas, then that's called a chabure, it's not called mile. That kind of stuff goes on now, but Baruch Hashem, that's why you hear it, this yeshiva. So you can understand a little bit that our Torah came from Moshe Rabbeinu, not from Williamsburg.
Yeah. Maybe there was a question over there.
How is this area in terms of nerve endings?
I'm sorry?
In terms of the nerve endings, at what point does this become painful? When do we hear that staccato cry that you always seem to hear these verses?
I didn't catch you. Say again.
At what point is this painful, and at what point do we hear that what's essentially a staccato cry? It's a trua of
the child.
Of the child.
Okay. We have a minute. Avi had. I gave here the very last page in the big handout. Near the very last page, I gave you there on the use of anesthetic. Anyway, it's interesting that and to my surprise, that Rav Vosner need to oppose the use of any anesthetic. I'll give you this safety and efficacy of topical anesthetic. There is no excuse today not to use an anesthetic. It's one thing, not a bad tiny, that on a girl you shouldn't use total anesthesia, where you knock them out, an adult. But not to use an anesthetic, the best topical anesthetic doesn't take away all the pain. But even that's because we're not good enough. Alibi, we had something, it took away all the pain. There's no excuse. I believe it's Aliso Daraisa of Lo Yosef Lakosov to cause someone injury, pain, is also to do so if you don't have to. If it's Maisev Mila, fine. Alecha Aragnu Kol Hayom, Kodesh Bohu didn't require us to suffer pain to do his mitzvahs. Only two mitzvahs asked for pain. Fasting and Yom Kippur and Mila. Those are the two. Otherwise, we have no mitzvahs that demand us to have pain. If you can avoid pain, fine. So it's strange the kind of quotes that have been used to prohibit the use of a topical anesthetic. Now in New York State, at least, a doctor cannot make circumcision without using a cream called EMLA, E-M-L-A. It's a wonderful cream. It earns a very nice living for the people who manufacture it. It's totally valueless as an anesthetic during mealing. Just doesn't do it. Maybe if they did it differently, if they put it on an hour before and wrapped it and so on, who knows? But we have it's not my invention, that's what I gave you, from the most reputable journal that we have, the Journal of Pediatrics. And a long time ago, right, already, they tell you that one that's not on the market, but every druggist who makes it up, 30% lidocaine, the EMLA contains that lidocaine. That's novocaine, the same thing that injection that the dentist gives you when you go in for some dental work. But it has to be in a higher concentration at 30%. And they show that even though it's 30%, it's effective, it does not enter the bloodstream. It's not absorbed by the baby. It's perfectly safe to use. And in Muncie, we have two more modern Moalim. Our local druggist makes it up for them. And we find it very effective. When I invited to be Sandik at a bris, I always take along a little tube of this, the lidocaine and make sure that the mother puts it on a half hour or so before the meal, it doesn't interfere with the meal, since the moil always wipes off the area with water, or detergent, a drop of alcohol, this doesn't interfere with the action of the meal.
Rebbe, what were the objections for those who held you shouldn't use it?
Based upon an unbelievable medrash. Medrash says by Avraham Avinu, it says that Avraham Avinu knew how to use something. He shouldn't have any pain. But he didn't do so. So So my little eight-day-old baby is not interested in Harbo Schor. He has no schar anyway. It's all nonsense. So when the Moel wants to make Mila on himself, he shouldn't use that instead.
But
makes Mila on a little baby, it's irrational. But that in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, it's quite common, or most common, not to use an anisit. And we're talking about, unfortunately, I'm telling you, I say Sandik often enough to tell you, there's a heck of a difference if you use the anesthetic, the local anesthetic. The chilik is, the baby cries both times. But if you don't use anesthetic, you have trouble holding his legs. A little baby, when it's in extreme pain, challenges your strength to hold his legs apart there. And when you use the anesthetic, he cries. He cries also when the Moel takes off his diaper.
I'll just tell you, as far as that is concerned, anything that somebody's going to tell you that the nerve endings are not developed is bogus. Okay? Because the baby feels pain. His crying is when the Moel starts really touching him. He starts to cry if they separate his legs and hold his legs back, because that's uncomfortable, you're bothering him. But as far as pain from the Mila, once the actual Mila is over, then that pain is over. Everything else, just leave me alone, get off of me. I think, usually when I interview him, he says, wah, so.
Well, you should know, by the way, there's an interesting, I don't know if you saw it, there's an article from Harvard Medical School in the late 1800s that giving the baby sweet wine serves as an analgesic, as it could be. And all the Moelim swear that it's true. And many of the Moelim who don't use an anesthetic on the place will give the baby a few drops of the wine before the meal, as if this was a kind of narcotic. So it depends who the Moel is. If there's a little bit of marijuana in there, it usually works. Okay?
Thank you.
Now, Mitch, we'll speed it up. We'll speed up next week. If you people get a chance, on the big handout, you can read the little handout, but the big handout, Mr. Chem, go to the Yoredeya. I reproduced most of the Yoredeya there.
If anybody wants, just I'll stick around if you have any questions afterwards. I also have cards here if you want to contact me in any other way.
I see a few brief announcements.